Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I know you turn on the radio early in the morning and you kind of go batty. You think, why am I up so early in the morning? Well, look up at the sky. It might be that you see a bat. Well, probably not. Unless you're like, we're up at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning, then you might have seen some. There are more bats around the Chicago area than you might think. In fact, people are now putting up bat houses. There is such a thing. To encourage bats, is that a good idea? Well, it turns out it probably is a good idea, and Dr. Patrick Flynn will be here to explain why. Do you have a cat? Odds are, statistically, that cat is a senior cat. No offense to your cat, but that's probably true. I mean, we do have a nation filled with aging pets. It's changing over now. So it's those middle-aged pets that are the minority, actually. So most pets are older, dogs or cats. The second group are younger, you know, puppies or maybe up to the age of 3 or 4. And then the third group is everything in between. Well, it's those senior cats that we'll talk about later in the program. The American Association of Feline Practitioners has new guidelines for senior kitty cats. Dr. Douglas Kratt is the immediate past president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. And by the way, information about what not only we are about to talk about, but as the story continues to evolve regarding COVID-19 and our companion animals, avma.org is a wonderful website. And I congratulate you, Dr. Kratt, from the very onset of the epidemic. The American Veterinary Medical Association was on it, understanding concerns from both your members, professionals in the veterinary field, as well as pet parents. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome. You know, it was great being able to get information out that people wanted and needed in a timely fashion. So anything that we could make the pandemic slightly easier for people and try to keep, the anxiety down was well worth it.
And along those lines, I think that we're thinking about what's called zoonosis. That's disease that we can get from our companion animals or other animals for that matter. And maybe more in the summer even, something to think about as we go to state fairs and other sorts of events where a variety of animals are at. So what should we know about that? Maybe that we did know 5 years ago or 2 years ago, but now maybe there's a heightened interest in paying attention to it.
So I guess everything that we learned from our COVID pandemic that we are still, you know, kind of making our way out of, will help us for zoonosis with our pets, and if we're going to the state fairs and the county fairs and things and seeing, some of the livestock there, will help us the exact same way. Really good hygiene. So wash your hands after you pet the animals. Don't touch your eyes. Don't touch your face. Don't touch your nose. And the vast majority of zoonotic issues then at that point will not be a problem for you.
Yeah, you know, this is something veterinarians have known all along, and I'd say are more aware of, arguably, than physicians, medical doctors, because that's the world that veterinarians are trained in the first place. And it's all about prevention, and prevention really can happen if we use some common sense things like hand sanitizer and washing our hands. We can do that, but it's important to make sure that kids do that too, because they're young kids in particular aren't necessarily going to know to do that. And they are more likely to put their hands in their mouth, I suspect, as well.
Right. So younger kids will put anything, you know, put a lot of different things in their mouth that we wouldn't think of as adults. There's no doubt about it. I go back to the old laws that were put with respects to how big turtles have to be before they're sold. You know, there was a reason why they had to be so large before that, so kids wouldn't be able to put them in their mouths and offer issues with that. But, you know, I don't want people to be afraid of our pets or be afraid of these animals, because we've lived together well for long periods of time. And working with your healthcare professional and your veterinary healthcare professional will help keep everybody protected. But we know that these animals bring so much joy into our lives and make them so much more fulfilled, that I don't want people to be afraid of going to those things. There's so much to learn, so many great things to do at those fairs, that taking advantage of it, especially post-pandemic now, so we can get back to a little bit of normalcy, it is just, you get so much more out of it.
Well, I think that's a great point. But there are some things you should be afraid of. One of those might be because of all the rain we've gotten. And in some parts of the country, the same thing. There's been like this overgrowth in places of mushrooms, for example, in our backyard. And we don't necessarily think about that. But our dogs do have we don't live this way, but our dogs do. They have their nose to the ground all the time, and they be sniffing at those mushrooms. Can that be a problem?
Some of the mushrooms definitely can cause varying levels of toxicity or poisoning with it, right? Some of them are fine, but some of them can cause those issues. I think safety is where I err on that. So if you have an area that these mushrooms may be growing in your yard, readily look at them and get rid of them as soon as you see them. I personally have a dog that I think thinks those are truffles and will go after them right away. And so I have to be very diligent to make sure that those are out of my yard at any given time. And there's also some plants that people use for decoration in their backyard that pets chew on. And, you know, we kind of know a lot about the lilies or and sometimes some of the yews and things, but you know, rhododendron are relatively normal back there, and those can be harmful to our pets as well. So just making sure that when you're designing your area in your backyard, your fauna in your backyard, that in the flora, that it is safe for your pet to do.
We're running out of time here, but very briefly, something that isn't talked about a lot are these algae blooms that are happening, and they're happening more often all over the country, including in the Chicago area. What am I talking about here, and why is this important?
So algae can release a toxin that gets on your pet's furs if they're either drinking from it or swimming in those areas chasing a stick or chasing something, and they can definitely cause problems to those pets, respiratory problems, sometimes nervous system problems. And so you want to make sure that if your animals are getting into those type of areas, and also pay attention to the alerts, that you hose them off and get them clean with fresh water before they get a chance to ingest any of that.
Yeah, I think that's very important advice. And in some places, in some counties in Illinois, there is warning about these algae blooms, but in other places there isn't, or maybe the officials haven't yet learned about it. So be safe rather than be sorry and do what Dr. Kratz just said. I think that's great advice. Of course it is great advice. He is the immediate past president of the American Veterinary Medical Association, AVMA.org. For more, Dr. Douglas Kratz, thank you as always.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Patrick Flynn is a professional services veterinarian. I said it that way because it sounds very official that way, of Zoetis, and incoming president of the Human Animal Bond Association. Dr. Flynn, you are here because if I'm Robin, you're Batman. You are a proponent of bats, and I'm thinking, and I'm sure many people are, why is this so exciting, and what does that have to do with the human-animal bond after all? So what do bats have to do with the human-animal bond?
That's a great question, and yeah, I find more and more people talking about bats these days, and it's kind of exciting because they're basically invisible to us, but gosh, the things that they do for us and help us with, the list is actually quite long. Bats have been here longer than we have on the surface of the earth, but we get along quite nicely, and they are, believe it or not, the second most common mammal by volume on the surface of the earth. They represent about 23% of all mammals on Earth and almost 1,500 species of these guys.
Wow.
So there must be a reason that they're here. And I kind of frame it into the big three P's. Parasite control, their pollinators, and poop. And if I can ever end the list with poop, I try and do it.
All right, so let's leave people wanting more. We'll get to poop in a second. but first, parasite control. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, the average bat in North America can consume over 1,000 mosquitoes per hour when they're out hunting. And so that results in an unbelievably wonderful positive result for parasite control and over agriculture and over, you know, lived or populated areas of humans in a completely free and non-toxic way. It's estimated that they save us almost $4 billion in parasite control of particularly mosquitoes and other bugs every year. And they do that silently at night, and they ask nothing for it.
And it's really important. So mosquitoes, of course, spread heartworm to dogs. They could spread Zika virus to us and in other parts of the world, malaria and other disease. I mean, this is not a complete list. So mosquitoes do have their issues with human beings and our companion animals, dogs and cats actually can get heartworm. So imagine how many mosquitoes there would be if there were not for bats.
I can't. I mean, I'm living here in Florida. I can't imagine we would be completely overrun.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that's one of the P's. Give me another.
The other biggie is they are pollinators. I think bees get all the good press on this, but bats are pollinators as well, and they pollinate in several different ways. But the cool thing is they pollinate all sorts of neat things that we deal with on a regular basis. Mangoes, if you're a mango person, or bananas, in many parts of the world, are pollinated by bats. There are some flowers that actually only open and need pollination at night in the desert. Some of those only open one night of the year, and they're visited by bats. But the one everyone loves the most is that bats pollinate agave plants.
Aha!
And that's where we get...
Tequila! I knew you were going to go there, which is why you're my friend. And then the third is all about poop. Explain what that's about.
Poop, yeah. So the word of the day is guano. Guano is a fun word to say, but it's also super rich in nitrogen. Their feces actually is a really highly sought after fertilizer. And so it's collected from caves, and it's also, you know, naturally distributed as they fly along and hunt. They're pooping, and they're usually hunting over fields and agricultural areas or other natural areas. And that wonderful guano is coming down and serving to fertilize the plants below, including the agave plant. And even, you know, less of a concern for us, but in bat caves, these are huge piles of guano, and they serve as actually a whole separate little world for other little creatures and microbes and spiders and all sorts of little creatures to live in. So bats are givers, no doubt.
Well, we've got an exciting announcement, a conversation with this guy, Dr. Patrick Flynn. It'll be one of those Facebook Live sort of events on the Human Animal Bond Association Facebook page. Human Animal Bond Association, if you're on Facebook, just type in Human Animal Bond Association or go to HABA.net, HABA initials for Human Animal Bond Association, and you will learn when I will have a much longer conversation about bats. And I think we'll have stuff to give away, and we'll make it a lot of fun with Dr. Flynn. That is coming up. We don't have a specific date yet, but we will. Dr. Flynn, as always, thank you very much for going batty with us.
Always a pleasure.
Dr. Hazel Carney is the chair of the American Association of Feline Practitioners Guidelines Committee and co-chaired this specific guidelines for senior cats. Yes, our cats are living longer than ever before, which is good news, Dr. Carney. But I suppose the bad news coming with that is that, well, just as in aging people, aging dogs, aging anything, there are issues that come along with that, I suppose.
Definitely. And cats are such masters at hiding so many of those, at least 8.5 of those 9 lives, that the more we can eke out information, the better we are equipped to help them.
You know, at one point in time, veterinarians, I'm going back decades now, but still thought, okay, cats somehow don't even suffer from pain, which was silly if you think about it today, but that's what we thought back then. Today, of course, we know, yeah, they do. And the reason why it was thought, it's what you allude to, they mask illness, they mask pain so well. But they're essentially wired the same way we are. They suffer pain if they don't tell us. And pain itself can be an issue. And we see more of that issue, I presume, in aging cats.
Yes, because they have, just as aging people, more potential sources of pain generation with developing comorbidities, multiple diseases, etc.
And at one point in time, and we're still not as good, in my view, as we should be, at addressing pain in cats, there are certainly lots of things we can do. And is the approach today, I'm about to use a fancy term, multimodal, using essentially whatever works for that individual cat, would that be a good way to describe it?
Definitely. We are incorporating multiple disciplines, treatment options, management concerns, environmental manipulation to decrease the pain these cats encounter.
And what I should have said at the outset, because I think it's really important, is that these guidelines, years ago when the guidelines were created for cats by the American Association of Feline Practitioners, they were for veterinary professionals. But over the past several years, there's a version of the guidelines that's available for the general public. So everything we're talking about, I'll give you some information, friends. We'll give you a website where you can go for absolutely no charge to get these guidelines for yourself written in a way that you can understand. If you have an aging cat, and most cats in America are aging cats, you'll want to take a look at these guidelines. You describe, in these guidelines how you can tell if your cat's in pain in the first place. It seems clear, but I don't believe it often is.
No. Once you learn some of their hints, then it becomes more obvious. But until veterinarians educate clients about the subtle changes to observe, then many owners do miss early and progressive pain.
And is catching it early helpful, not only so the cat isn't suffering as long, but making whatever it is you do to treat it maybe more effective?
Definitely. Anytime you can intervene early in a cat, you have a greater chance of bringing it better comfort.
Mm-hmm. You know, you see a picture of an older cat, or maybe you visit a friend's house, and you say, oh my gosh, that cat is so skinny. Is that common?
Yes. Loss of both body fat and lean muscle mass are very common in the aging cat, and something that we try to fight all the way, because the better we maintain, especially lean body mass, as a cat ages, the healthier and more enjoyable their life will be.
And all of that information in the Senior Care Guidelines from the American Association of Feline Practitioners. Website for that is catvets.com. And you can download it yourself. You can print it out. You can just read it online, whatever you'd like. It's absolutely free. Dr. Hazel Carney, thank you so much for doing this, for helping our senior cats. Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Conti does not talk about this. You know, legally speaking on WGN, Karen should talk about this. You know, some animals, they mate for life. Geese, Canadian geese anyway, are an example of that. And we do too, right? But in America anyway, half of us, I think the number is 55% even, or 60%, half of those unions end in divorce. In the world of geese, Karen Conti, you would be out of work. There are no divorce lawyers for geese. Not as far as I know, anyway. Veterinary surgeons at the New England Wildlife Center in Cape Cod happen to be, the facility is near a pond. And right at that pond live a pair of geese. And the veterinarians there noticed one of the geese had been limping, even falling over, and probably wasn't drinking too much, or at least not alcohol, maybe water from the pond, but that wouldn't be the explanation. So they caught that goose, brought the goose in, and they found it had a broken foot. So they're doing surgery at this point to fix it. It's very fixable. And they hear a knock, another knock, over and over on their glass door. They're on the first floor, and there's a glass door, you know, one of the sliding doors, and over. So they open up the curtains, and they see a goose, the mate of the goose that's on the operating table. And that goose is honk, honk. I don't sound like a goose, do I? But very unhappy about things. What's my husband doing in there? Do they call themselves husband and wife? I don't really know. But very upset about things. So after the surgery, and the surgery at this point was about done, they bring the goose that was on the operating table down to recover from the anesthetic right near the mate. And as that goose wakes up, they begin talking to one another. They're having this whole conversation right through the glass. And the goose perks up a bit. And it turns out this goose recovered faster than the veterinarians would have expected, and they're really thinking that this goose that would have been out of the hospital after maybe 3 days was out after barely 2 days because of the mate being there. And we know in human medicine there have been many studies that have been done. If family members are around, people do tend to get better with encouragement much faster. So this other goose was probably encouraging the goose, yeah, get better. We need to get back out there to do what goose do. And that's eat and have it come out the other end, because goose are very good at that. And we're really good at that, but we can't do that without you. We need to be together. That's exactly what happened. It's amazing, though. I think that's quite a romantic story. We'll be back next week with more romance right here, bright and early, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN.